So the funny thing about zebras is sometimes they're standing right in front of you and you don't see them. And sometimes you're just not used to looking for them at all. So I've had a little more data now, had an audiogram last week, and the audiogram, the data there is I have zero hearing in my right ear right now. Yeah, it's pretty stark. Luckily, my left ear has above average hearing, but my right ear has zero hearing, so no fluid in my ear. So that really means that I have nerve damage to my ear and my right ear, which is causing this hearing loss at the moment. And it's interesting. So sudden hearing loss, you know, there's so many things that actually can present similar symptoms that can be kind of different mechanisms that create what's kind of happening with me right now. And it definitely feels like the zebra event is more like I had this precursor cold virus, you know, that led into this viral attack to my inner ear. And then I had fluid in my ears from my cold. So that kind of masked the fact that, you know, I had something more significant going on in terms of my hearing. So when the doctor, the emergency room doctor and my PCP looked in my ear, like, oh, there's fluid in there. We'll let that drain out, blah, 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 blah. And then your hearing should be better. Well, realistically, at some point during that whole process, nobody knows when the timing is, I actually had a more significant event that resulted in me losing my hearing. So that's kind of the zebra. It's been kind of an interesting window in terms of not only our healthcare system, but the healthcare you have access to. Being in a rural area, kind of the signs and symptoms of the things I was presenting may have triggered a different kind of, I don't want to say alarm bells, but a different timing of events and a more aggressive seeking out of information if I had been in a more metropolitan area that might have picked up on some of the things that were happening to me. But that's neither here nor there. Still experiencing disequilibrium because, once again, the hearing nerve and the balance nerve go through the same channel in your head. And if you have swelling in there because it goes through bone, there's no space for that swelling to go except to compress what's in there. So that's the nerve damage piece. Still going to get an MRI to just make sure that the other zebra event, that this is a tumor of some sort, even a benign tumor creating this, is not what's happening. The doctors don't necessarily think that, but doctors are wrong. Most of the specialists or all the specialists I've talked to, think that the likelihood of me regaining my hearing is low, but not impossible. And then, you know, the thing with nerves, it's not like broken bones. Like, we're pretty good at fixing broken bones. Like, we know a lot about how broken bones work and how that goes back together and timing and stuff. When you're dealing with nerves and brain stuff, that's a lot more squishy and amorphous. So I could regain hearing, but it could be months to years before I might notice that difference. So that's kind of interesting. But I went to the climbing gym this past weekend. First time I drove there, 35 minutes, good for me. I had a chaperone and climbed probably half dozen routes I can still climb, even at a relatively harder grade. I mean, I didn't climb anything. I didn't really push myself to failure. Mostly just trying to see how it felt. And it was definitely more challenging. I had woken up with with very little disequilibrium. And then when I was on the wall, it became much more pronounced. I was really surprised, actually. The more slabby and technical and subtle the movement is, the more it affected me with my disequilibrium, which makes sense. The more it's kind of like juggy, overhanging, just core tension, getting your body in the right position. Steep routes actually affected my disequilibrium less, which kind of makes sense too. So, when I got home, or I should say the day after, I was really tired. Like, I woke up really tired with more disequilibrium than I had experienced in a while for the whole day. And really just based on climbing half dozen routes that are physically well within my ability. But my brain was really working hard. So kind of like a little bit of a wake up call with maybe the duration it might take to become more fully functional. Not sure. Certainly a little more of a wake-up call with the hearing, because I have a little more data with that now. The balancing is more troubling to me. The hearing thing, I'm less troubled, even though listening and sound has been very important to me for a long time for various reasons. I can still hear. It's just my soundscape's a little more reduced in terms of like fully like encompassing you like a surround sound. Neat thing is that our body wants to heal. So like both with the balance and the sound, my brain's already trying to figure out how to make this work and try to, you know, utilize the resources that are working well to compensate for the things that aren't working well. So it's still kind of early. I'm actually going to get some injections in my ear, some steroidal injections, which if this would have been diagnosed sooner, the efficacy of that might be more pronounced. But at this point, it's no harm, no foul. There's no real reason not to get them. It may help. It may not. There's not a real lot of risk associated with it. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. But one of the things that's interesting about guiding, and I've reckoned this for a long time, and I've certainly, I think I've hinted at it here or there, maybe in the podcast, is like, I use my ears and sound a lot with guiding. I think sound's an actually really important thing. Once again, it just gives us another layer. It's like having topographical lines on a map. It gives you a third dimension, right? So you're not just dealing with 2D, you're dealing with 3D. So the same thing for me with sound. Like we have our ability to feel our bodies in space, our balance, our vestibular system, right? That sense. But we also have our visual system playing and giving us a lot of information. But we also utilize our ears a lot. And, you know, some of that is just picking up on the cues around you and being able to kind of put you in a place relative to something else. Like thinking about walking through the woods and then you hear a bird somewhere. You can start pretty quickly honing in the rough direction that that bird is relative to you. So you kind of know where to look and maybe even kind of distance, right, that you should kind of be thinking about in terms of that sound. So just being in nature and having the soundscape fully add that color into your visual scape has been always really interesting and really is immersive to be able to put all those pieces together and really tease out what's around you. But, you know, I think about in all the disciplines, sound's important, right? I mean, thinking about ski touring, being able to hear a whoomph as the snow settles underneath you, indicating some weak layers that are failing, right? Sometimes you can feel that, but sometimes they're far enough away that you hear that. Or hearing the snow fall off a tree as it's settling, right? That's an indication the snowpack's settling. Like, you might not visually see those things, but you might pick up on them as you're out in the field, right? A big thing is, like, sometimes you're in a place, like in a valley, for example, and you can hear the wind on the ridgeline. You're like, holy cow. Like, there's no other indicator. There's no clouds moving over the ridgeline, you know, like lenticulars, or there's no vegetation that you can see if it's above tree line that you have any visual clue to the sound that there's wind, but you can hear it. And you don't always feel it, right? You might be in a place that's sheltered from the wind, but you can hear, like, oh, wow, the wind is hauling up there. Or even, likewise, being able to observe something like the wind all of a sudden increases and there's no visual or physical cues to you, like, but it might be like, okay, cool, the rain's about to happen, or the rain's about to intensify, or the snow's about to intensify, you know, if you're in kind of those type of weather patterns. Those are cues that something else is about to happen immediately that might affect you, right? And those are things that you pick up on as you're out and about, which is kind of interesting. Or just thinking about ice climbing, right? Listening to the quality of the ice is a big thing. So there's like a feel component, how the ice feels. There's a visual component, how the ice looks. But there's also a sound component. Does the ice sound dull or dud? You know, is it really soft, so it kind of has more of a dud sound to it? Is it sound like chimes? It's really hard, brittle ice, and then the formations really sound like bells. You're like, ooh, that sounds like, you know, brittle ice to me, right? So the soundscape of ice is actually interesting as a way of assessing the quality, or one of the tools that we might use to assess the qualities of ice. Or ice fall happens, right? You may not see it, but you hear it, and then it alerts you to what's happening around you once again. You're focused on something in front of you visually, then you hear this ice fall, and you're like, whoa, what's happening? Is it a little ice fall? Is it a lot ice fall? Is it due to natural things like sun and degradation of the ice? Is it because there's another party over there wrapping down, whatever? So we use those cues once again to figure that, help figure those pieces out. And, you know, in the wintertime, our kind of sound and visual sphere is oftentimes reduced because we're wearing so much more clothing and we're kind of locked into having the least amount of our body exposed to the elements. So that becomes even more challenging if you have a potential hearing challenge. Just like in rock climbing, right? Alpine climbing, what are you doing? You're constantly tapping on rock, hearing if it's hollow or not. You do that anyway with rock climbing, building anchors and stuff in an area. You might tap on some rock if there's a feature that looks like it might be hollow, just to both feel this the hollowness, but also hear the hollowness of that. Likewise, rockfall. You're in a place that has rockfall, you know, or prone to rockfall, or maybe it's not prone to rockfall, and all of a sudden you experience that. Like, where is it coming from? Is it near you? Is it above you? Right? Is it naturally caused? Is it human caused or whatever? Like, those are things that alert us to a change that's happening in the environment we're in, and a new hazard that might be introduced to us. Someone just yells rock, right? Because they knock a rock off or drop a piece of equipment, right? Once again, we're using our audio cues to pick up on that. So, you know, it is through all the different disciplines that we have. I mean, once again, I work at these sea cliffs in the summer a lot, and we have this piece of wave actions, which is oftentimes very visual, but some, depending on where you are on the cliffs, you don't always get good visuals, but sometimes you hear the waves crashing, and that intensity gives you to a clue to either the frequency, so the period in which the waves are crashing. Like, it's not uncommon to have a certain height of waves, and then there's a period of time where there's a set of waves that are bigger than all the others that come in at kind of regular intervals. And if you're really attuned to the natural environment, you can hear that, or just like, ooh, that sounds like a big one. That's a big one over there. And you might be in a part of the cliff where that sound cue is giving you a little more of a heads up to give you quick, like, all right, you need to get moving. There's a wave that just crashed over here, and that's might travel to where you are. We don't have a lot of time, right? So that sound cue for the ocean piece that I deal with is also kind of interesting in terms of my work. And then just think about how much we listen to our clients. I listen to my clients a lot, and not just about what they're saying, but I'm listening to their body and how they are, right? I'm listening to whether their breath quickens or slows down, right? I'm listening to their verbal reactions to things, like that they aren't even always realizing that they're doing, like a effort piece, right? I'm listening to how well they sound their breathing or their speeches when you're doing something that requires endurance, like a prolonged endurance stretch of approaching a climb for miles or hours or snowshoeing up to the base of an ice climb through deep snow. Like, where is their effort right now? Are they redlining? Are they relaxed, nose breathing? Are they able to hold a conversation, right? So even if I'm not talking to them, to probe for that, using that tool as exertion, probe their level of exertion, I'm listening to their level of exertion. Also, you can hear how they move. Are they moving fluidly? Are they stumbling? Did they just trip, right? I think about, like, when you have really excellent neve, really perfect neve snow, like, how much data I get just from the squeaky sound of crampons penetrating neve with my clients, and the patterns in which you roll your feet from, you know, going in from edging your top points to flat footing, but also like forward and back leaning, because when you get really attuned to that sound, leaning forward and leaning back on your crampons has a little bit of a different sound profile than rolling your bottom rail of points into the snow. So once again, as I'm in a prolonged like short roping type of event, maybe, and I'm in this like big open neve slope and I'm trying to read like the subtle features of the snow to find the like path of least resistance, I have to focus a lot of my visual cues to where I'm going, right? And I use my ears to listen to what's behind me to see what's happening with my client. Obviously, we scan back and forth, but I do use my hearing quite a bit to kind of figure out what's going on there. Same thing in ski touring. How well is someone ski touring behind me? Is the pace right? How are they doing on the kick turn, right? I can hear a lot of that stuff happening, you know, without having to look at them. So the actual guiding soundscape is pretty significant when you actually start tapping in and being conscious of the data that you're actually receiving all the time. And, you know, the losing my hearing doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't bother me, but I'm not really thinking that much about it. I'm not like, oh, I can't hear in my right ear and that might be permanent. Like, it's a thing. A lot of people lose their hearing. We can compensate. There's technology that might be at play in the future for me with different hearing aid type devices. I might start using radios more. You know, there's just little subtle things about, like, you know, I just know certain climbs that if I get back to the point where I can do certain climbs, whether it's top managed or leading, where it's like certain stances, people need to be on my right hand side, and it'll be harder to hear because I don't have any hearing on my right hand side. So just little things like, can I stack people on the other side, or what am I going to do to facilitate the best sense of me being able to hear them while they're on this side? Or even just, I do a lot of instruction, teaching to a large group, right? Like, that will change my interaction to some degree with a group, because I won't be always able to potentially hear the group as well because of having a noise or a sound shadow on one side. Once again, I'm still really early into this. So once again, hearing could come back a little bit, a lot. There could be some technologies in play that will help this. But just kind of brainstorming about the future and just thinking about how much, not only do I enjoy the aural space of life in general, but also how much I use it in guiding. And I have two examples that kind of stick out to me about the sound space and guiding. Is one time, this was years ago, I had this young woman, she was a teenager, who was completely deaf. And we went, I think it was her first time rock climbing outside. And we went to the sea cliffs. And it was like this day, it was like a classic New England coastal day. It was early October, so it was crisp. It was like crystal blue sky, like really nice dry air. So like the sun and the sky and just the visual piece was striking, so beautiful. It was windy, and we also had a lot of waves. So we were the only people at the sea cliffs. And it was really interesting because it's one of these days, if you go to the sea cliffs, where there's a lot of extra data that you have to deal with. There's the crashing of the waves, right? There's the wind like pushing you on the climbs, that physical sense of the wind. But then also just the sound of the wind was significant. And I just remember like that sound of things can make people unhinged. Like people sometimes will freak out just with the sound of wind. It's kind of amazing. Even if it can't hurt them, like if in a place where it can't hurt them, just the sound of it kind of makes them crazy. And I just remember how calm this young woman was. And maybe that's partly just because she was really calm, but like having to, being able to remove the sound piece, that data, and be able to focus that much more energy on just being there must have been pretty awesome, whether or not she recognized that or not. I kind of picked up onto it because I've just seen the sound piece really affect people in that environment. And it was really fun because she spoke sign language, which I do not. I always wanted to learn sign language, and her interpreter did not want to come anywhere near the cliff edge since we were top man. She had no desire whatsoever, refused to get anywhere near the cliff. So I was trying to learn sign language from the interpreter who was sitting well away from the cliff. I was like, how do you sign this? And then she would show me that, and then I would sign it to this young woman. So it was like this really interesting experience that we all got to have. And, you know, as the session went on, like, you know, my sign language got, you know, arguably better. But when you start with zero, something's better than zero. So I actually had some like really rudimentary actual sign language to communicate with this young woman, which was really empowering for me, and I think really helpful. When I was younger, I always wanted to like develop like an international guide sign language so we could communicate, because you might be parallel guiding next to another guide, but you can't really verbally connect with them. And you might not want to verbally connect with them and just kind of have subtle communication with them to let them know like what's up. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then the other example that sticks in my mind is kind of the reverse. Is I've actually guided Eric Weimeyer, the really well-known blind climber. He's really an adventure athlete. He's like climbed all seven summits. He's done some pretty significant ice climbs and rock climbs. He's paddled the Grand Canyon in a kayak. And I did some rock climbing with him on the ski cliffs, which was really awesome. But then I also took him on one of these little micro expeditions I do to our high peak in the winter. He did a winter trip. And there's a bunch of us. He had three other friends with him, one of which was this other guide named Charlie Mace, super nice guy, Everest guide. And those two is pretty funny because they're like, this place is colder than Everest. I'm like, yeah, welcome to New England. But the thing with Eric is because he doesn't have any sight, you know, his hearing is really developed, and he uses sound to help navigate that space, right? So instead of me listening to sound to help my guiding, now I was creating sound. So we were doing this mountaineer's route on Katahdin, and it had been a really cold winter, and the snow on the mountain was everywhere there was snow, it was neve. It was beautiful conditions that winter in terms of just moving around the mountain. It was neve everywhere. And I remember that when you guide Eric, like, we didn't need to be roped for this particular section. It was snow climbing. And he's, you know, really competent, actually, climber. And, you know, you carry a bell when you guide Eric so he can hear the bell. But because there was excellent neve, he immediately focused in on my footsteps because he could hear the squeaking of my footsteps. So he was, like, right behind me. And it was amazing because if I, like, kind of went up and like worked my way around and through rocks, he would be immediately exactly where I was walking because he could hear that sound change as we moved through terrain features. So now I was in a position and I was being more conscious of trying to create more sound for him with making my crampon motion more squeaky, making just my body motions more squeaky, maybe hitting things more with my ice axe, just to give him more cues. And then when we got into situations where, like, either A, that was less pronounced, or B, the wind was more pronounced so he couldn't hear that noise, then we could go and utilize the bell to help give him a little more of a capacity to kind of orient himself to me in space. So it was really interesting how important sound is, how enjoyable it is, at least for me, whether it's music or listening to birds or just listening to the natural environment like wind and waves and stuff like that on top of the animals and stuff in that natural environment, but also how much data we're getting from that space and also our clients to help build, once again, a mental model of what's happening at the moment and what we might need to do in the future. It's just kind of interesting. And I'm just going to have to learn maybe some different strategies to that space and how I've traditionally used it. So, yeah, kind of a a fun mental exercise. But definitely, if you haven't been as aware of the sound surrounding you while you're guiding, try to be a little more observant of what you're hearing and what you're creating and how that may help you do your work better. So, because I've spent a lot of time thinking about sound and observing that sound and putting those pieces together and how sound fits into what I do for work.